Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. So any time is a good time to learn, but right now many of us have been in self-isolation for a few weeks and are ready to go back to work. And since few of us know what the new normal will look like, maybe think now about what we'd like to do differently going forward and ramp up on new skills so we have better opportunities when we do go back. Today, I'm talking with Peter Economy, whose latest book is described as a management mentor in a book. Peter Economy is the best-selling author of Managing for Dummies. He's a top columnist at Inc.com, where he's known as the leadership guy. He works with C-level executives, executive coaches, and business consultants worldwide. And he's credited with more than 100 books and more than 1,500 columns on leadership. Today, we talk about management do's and don'ts, how to deal with toxic office politics, and something I see few people do well, and that's delegation. You probably know people yourself who say, oh, I don't like to delegate, but what they're really saying is they don't know how to delegate, and successful delegation can really make a huge difference. So here's my guest, Peter Economy, his new book, Wait, I'm the Boss. The essential guide for new managers to succeed from day one. Welcome, Peter Economy. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It's great to be here today.
It's good to have you here. We're really weird times, very uncertain times right now. But, you know, my way of thinking is since so many folks are in self-isolation because of the coronavirus, this is kind of a good time to spend some time trying to improve what we already know, learning new stuff, and getting ourselves in a stronger position so we can recover more quickly when things do get back to normal. What do you think?
Oh, you're quite right. This is a perfect time to assess where you're at in your career, in your management, leadership, wherever you're focused, and, you know, improve, do some self-improvement, identify areas that could do some work and then improve in those areas. Take the time to educate yourself and learn some new tricks, perhaps.
Yeah. So you're known as the leadership guy on Inc.com. You've got more than 100 books to your credit. What drove you down this path as a business writer, editor, consultant?
Well, I was a manager for quite a few years. And while I was a manager, a friend of mine approached me and asked me if I wanted to write a book about negotiation. That was my original expertise, was being a negotiator. And I said, I don't know, why would I want to write a book? And he said, well, we'll pay you a $2,500 advance. And I said, okay, I think I'll write a book. This was like around 1990. So my first book was called Negotiating to Win. It was published back in 1990. But I had a full-time career as a manager at the time. Some years later, I was managing a larger group of people, and 15 managers were laid off by our organization. I was one of the managers who was laid off, but by then I was writing kind of full-time as well. I had a full-time career during the day, and then at night I would go off to a coffee house after my wife went to bed. I'd go off and work until 2 or 3 in the morning, just writing, doing different writing projects. So I kind of had this two-path career thing going. So when I was laid off, I was like, oh, that's okay. I'll just, you know, write more. I'll do more writing and build that up. So I got a call the next day from, I think, my boss at the old job. And she said, oh, we found 6 months more money. Come on back. And I said, no, I don't think I will. Thank you very much, but I'm just going to do the writing thing now. So it's been about almost 20 years now I've been a full-time writer.
Right, right. Yeah, I heard from a friend this morning who just got laid off. She's a writer too and does the same kind of thing. And so she just got laid off from her full-time job this morning. So I suspect she's going to be spending a lot more time writing.
Yeah, and in my case, it was one of those cases where when one door closes, another door opened, and for me, it was definitely the best door to be opening.
Yeah, I think today, regardless of what's happening right now with the pandemic, the coronavirus and everything, that's the craziness that's going on right now, you've got to have more than one string to your bow, as they say these days, because you just never know what's around the corner. So we're talking today about Wait, I'm the Boss, the essential guide for new managers to succeed from day one. And you write in the introduction that most organizations don't train their new managers and say that most managers get their first leadership training in their early 40s, which is about a decade too late. By which time, of course, we've adopted all kinds of bad habits and bumbled along by ourselves and have to unlearn them. So talk to us about that a little, if you would.
Well, sure. In the United States, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has done some research, and they found that small businesses, businesses that are small to up to maybe 100 employees, they only give their managers 24 minutes of management training a year. And at first, for larger companies that are 100 to 500 employees, they only get about 12 minutes a year of management training, which is really nothing. I know that personally, myself, I received no training along the way at all in management when I was, a manager. I was just expected to learn by, I think, either osmosis, just, kind of watching what was going on around me, or maybe reading a book. I remember when the One-Minute Manager was a very popular book, so we all were reading that book and trying to learn. But I think that that's a huge failure on the part of most smaller businesses, that they don't really do anything for training managers. The largest businesses, the Fortune 500 businesses, usually have all kinds of management training. They have full tracks of development tracks for their employees. When they see someone who's got leadership potential, they'll put them on a track of training to give them progressively better responsibilities, more responsibilities, sending them around the world in different positions.
So your aim with your new book, Wait, I'm the Boss, is to provide basically a mentor in a book, which is really helpful to people who don't get that formal training. I remember I had to kind of make my own list of what I wanted to do to get trained when I was a young manager. But, a lot of companies, as you said, don't do that. So tell us a little bit about the book in a nutshell, who you see it working really well for.
Well, there's probably two groups of people who would most benefit from this book. First of all, which is the real target of this book, is the group of people who are new managers. So these are the people who, like me, were just thrown into management, into the deep end of the pool. And, they would see if we either sank or swam. See what happened, see if we would be managers or not. And so this is really targeted for the new manager, particularly the new manager who has no training in management. This is also a good book for someone who's already a manager but just wants to brush up on some key management skills, because I cover most of the basics of management in this book.
Yeah, and I want to begin with what makes a bad boss, because I think if we know up front, what not to do, that helps us improve more quickly, I think, if we know what to watch out for and what to avoid. And according to a LinkedIn study, I think it was done in 2018, the four worst traits of bad bosses are not setting clear expectations, micromanagement, being aloof and not involved, and not fostering professional development. So give us an overview of what makes a bad boss in those areas, if you would.
So, we'll start at the tail end there. Not developing their employees, which is basically not delegating work. So if you're not delegating work to your people, it's really kind of a double whammy. In the first case, you as a manager you're going to have to do all the work for the organization. You end up saying, I can do it twice as fast, I can do it four times better if I don't delegate it. And I know I used to fall into that trap when I was a manager. I'd think, why should I hand out this task? Because I know I can do it faster and better, so let's just let me do it. That's a path to failure, because as a manager, your job is to get work done through other people. and to help them develop as their own careers and get more responsibility, progressively more responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I think it's critically important that we do that, that we delegate. And that's a huge failure for many managers, is not delegating.
Right. And it's a very important thing to learn how to delegate well, because your productivity goes up exponentially. And hopefully, you know, you're optimizing your results, your strengths. I mean, there are so many good things to delegating properly. I know people, and you probably do too, Peter, who say, oh, I don't like delegating, I'm such a control freak. But I see that as a huge weakness.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, and I think the number one sign of that is when a manager feels that he or she can't go away on holiday or vacation.
Right.
So, I mean, what will happen to this place when I'm gone? Well, if you feel like you can't get away for a week, a month, a day, whatever it might be, then that's a sure sign that you're not delegating properly.
Right. And so let's look at micromanaging, one of the other four worst traits, because that personally is my pet peeve. Micromanagement is a big thing. I do not like being micromanaged, as many people don't.
And I think we've all experienced that. I mean, I know that I've experienced that with some of my managers that I've had. And it's just something that, again, That tends to mean you don't trust your employees. That's a sign that there's no trust. And I think that trust is one of the most important things you have to build as a manager with your employees. Trust is sort of the, I don't know if I'd call it the lifeblood of an organization. It's part of the relationship you build with your people. And if you don't have that trust, they're not going to provide the high level of performance that you need from them, and
right.
they're not going to do what's the best thing for the organization and for you as a manager.
Right, and of course, our manager does not set clear expectations, then you know you've got everybody working in different directions. Possibly there's no real focus, and you know, good luck getting to the end goal if you're all doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, setting expectations is one of the number one, two, three jobs of a manager. You know, we often talk about what's the difference between a leader and a manager. And I guess a manager is the person who actually has to get things done. And by that, we mean setting goals and then actually holding people accountable to attaining those goals. So you have to have very clear expectations. I know many organizations that are really mushy, where expectations aren't clear. And that just causes frustration. It causes lack of engagement with employees. And we all know from all the surveys that most employees are not engaged. They're not fully engaged in their organizations as it is already.
Right.
So
right.
When you don't set clear expectations, they're not going to, why would they be engaged if they don't know what they're supposed to be doing? So that's a really big one as well.
Yes, and then the fourth worst trait of bad bosses, according to the LinkedIn study, was being aloof and not involved. And I'm sure we've all worked with people like that, colleagues and managers, when somebody is aloof and just doesn't participate.
Yeah, and that's something that I think that every manager needs to kind of keep an eye out for, because I don't know that most people notice that. They may not notice that they're being aloof, or they may not notice that they're being standoffish or just kind of holing up in an office. I mean, we used to, when I was an employee working for managers, I know that sometimes I'd work for a manager and I was afraid to go in their office, afraid to knock on their door, because it was clear the message was, don't bother me.
Right.
The door was closed. You know, the door was closed. You had to justify why you just interrupted them. So the tendency was, well, I guess I just won't bother interrupting them unless it's really, truly something, extremely serious. So that's really bad. I mean, that's a bad thing for any manager to do. So we used to have a thing called management by walking around. I mean, that used to be something that was kind of commonly said. Managers need to get out of the office. They need to, open the door. They need to be open to their employees. They need to spend time with their people and walk around and just, get to know them and communicate.
Yes, and I think even when you work in a busy environment, it's important to do that. I was accused once of being aloof because I always said good morning to people and, you know, how was your weekend and stuff. But sometimes that's not enough. They want you to go up and ask how their cat is and understand that, you know, they had a difficult weekend with their boyfriend or whatever. And you don't want to get too involved in that. But at the same time, there has to be a balance there. So that was a lesson I learned early on.
Yeah, and that's a real fine line, because I was first becoming a manager. I was taught that you don't develop relationships. You don't build those personal relationships. But I think that's wrong. I think you do want to build those personal relationships. But yeah, I don't want to know all the details about their cat getting sick and throwing up on the...
Yeah, but there are people who... I worked, for example, in a very fast-paced profit center, and the people in the back office, kind of moved at their own leisure, or at least that's how we on the front lines felt. And so sometimes I'd have clients in front of me, as a manager, and I'm saying, I'd call the back office and say, hey, I need this real quick. Can you find it for me, please? Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. But that didn't go over too well. They wanted me to say, hi, how are you doing today? So,
right.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for that, I guess. If you build those relationships and you actually keep them kind of personal, then those times you just need to get something without all those introductions and small talk, that maybe helps iron those out.
Good point. All right, let's look at some great leaders. You talk about this again in the book. Four characteristics of great leaders: decisive. They are decisive. They have integrity. They're optimistic and they are confident. But you say great leadership always begins with self-leadership. So let's start with self-leadership. What does that look like? What does it mean to you from your perspective?
Right. Well, self-leadership means being the leader that you should be. So it's setting an example for the others. So I think, what I talked about earlier on is that I learned management just by osmosis, by watching my own manager, how he led the organization. I learned the good and the bad. So you need to become a good leader. You need to exhibit that yourself. So I had a boss who used to leave at 4 o'clock a day, and that was his example of self-leadership. So when he left at 4 o'clock, everybody else left at 4:05. That was the example he set, and everybody emulated that, just took off as well.
Yeah. You are, as a manager, watched the whole time by your employees. Yeah, I see that. It's a bit like being a parent, certain things you don't do in front of your kids, and it's the same with work situations.
Exactly.
So let's look at, integrity. Sometimes I despair we have any integrity left in the world, but then I see good things happening. What does that mean in the workplace these days?
Well, integrity is probably several different aspects to that, but certainly honesty, being truthful and honest and transparent. So, you tell your people, your employees, the people you work with, the good news and the bad news. I know that there's always managers who are afraid to tell their people bad news because they're afraid that the people will get upset, they'll internalize it, their morale will fall. I think the opposite is true. I think you've got to tell everyone everything. And so integrity in that aspect is being honest, just truthful and treating your people like adults, like the adults they are. And then obviously when you say that you're going to do something, then you actually do it. If you promise you're going to do something, then you do it.
Right. One of the other four characteristics of great leaders, confidence. And I think that develops with time, with really knowing what you're doing. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that there's two kinds of confidence. There's the kind of confidence that maybe people come with. I don't know if it's genetic or just part of your upbringing.
Right.
Where people have some natural self-confidence that they've developed over their, earlier years. They bring that with them to the workplace. But there's also a confidence in knowing, having knowledge about what you're doing. So, again, as a manager, if you learn to be a good manager, if you gain those skills, then you'll gain confidence in your management position, and you'll start exuding that, and people will see that.
Yeah, and the fourth characteristic of great leaders, decisiveness. There is nothing worse than working with somebody who's wishy-washy or that says, okay, this is the direction we're going in, and 2 days later they've forgotten and they go, okay, we're changing direction or we're doing something entirely different. It's very frustrating. And sometimes that happens in the natural course of business based on external and internal demands. But, you know, if you're just being indecisive because you can't make up your mind, that's really bad.
Oh, it's terrible, because it is extremely frustrating to employees to have a boss who isn't decisive, who is wishy-washy, who can't seem to make up their mind. And, you know, you go off in, like you said, one direction, and then 2 days later, a week later, all of a sudden you're going back the other direction. Mm-hmm. And you're just wondering why you just wasted a week's time doing the work that you did, and now you just have to throw it all out. So super frustrating. And then, you know, there's another aspect of decisiveness too, though, is you don't want to be prematurely decisive, I guess is maybe the best way to put it. Some people make gut decisions without getting the data first. They'll say, oh, this feels like the right thing to do, and they'll just go down that path without getting all the data they should get first. So they make this quickly, then maybe they should take maybe a day to gather all the data first.
Right.
And make a decision, maybe a more informed decision, because if you make the wrong decision, then you may have to change it anyway.
Right, right. You talk about, in management style, you talk early in the book about theory X versus theory Y management styles, and you say the key is balance. So could you talk to us a little bit about what theory X is versus theory Y and how we balance that?
Sure. Well, theory X is all about trust. So people who, you know, who believe in theory X management, they don't really trust their employees. They think their employees are going to be lazy. They're going to take advantage of the system. They're going to just, you know, come to work, punch the clock, go home, collect their paycheck, and that's going to be that. So that's the theory X style of management, and that's really not a very positive style of management. It's very negative. Theory Y, on the other hand, is built on trust. It's when you trust your employees to do the right thing. You trust your employees to be looking out for the organization, for the customers, for everyone that they work with, their coworkers. So, you know, there is a balance. I mean, but obviously you want more theory Y. You want trust. You want to trust your employees. You should assume they're going to do what they're going to do. But there's a little bit of theory X in there, too, because you do need to hold them accountable. You need to have standards. You need to have goals. You need to make sure that they're actually achieving their goals, that they're meeting their standards, that they're performing, you know, to whatever standard you set. So I guess there's a little bit of theory X in there that you trust but verify. Make sure that they're actually doing what they say they're going to do.
Yeah. I want to talk about motivation in the workplace, because there are people who say you can't motivate employees. There are others who think it's their sole job to motivate employees. I can think of examples where I've seen teams who were very unmotivated as a team and seemingly as individuals. And then they had a different manager come in and it was like night and day. So talk to us a little bit about how you see the manager's role in motivating employees and some of the best ways to support employees in that area.
Right. So, yeah, I don't think motivation is all about rewards and recognition. Like, you know, let's give somebody a plaque, you know, the Employee of the Month plaque. I don't think that's particularly motivating. What I think is motivating is when you give people responsibility, you give them authority, you allow them to input into the decision-making process, you maybe involve them in the decision-making process. You know, it's empowerment. It's empowering your people to be valuable members of your organization. And I think that what you point out there is that managers often demotivate their people. They end up ruining their motivation. I think most people are naturally motivated. I don't think anyone comes to work saying, I want to do a bad job today.
Right, right.
I think they come to work saying, I'd love to do a great job today. I'd like to have a purpose. I'd like to change the world for the better, even if it's just, you know, in some small way. So I think bad bosses, in particular bad managers, demotivate their employees, and they end up with a team, like you said, that's not performing. A new manager comes in who actually doesn't destroy that motivation, and they're just a different team altogether.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from long experience myself working, you know, with many teams over the years, it's about really finding out what motivates individuals within the team. Because you can be working with a team of 30 or 100 people, whatever, or two people, it doesn't matter. But you can guarantee that the same thing is not going to motivate each individual within that team. So you really have to do a little digging and see what's going to motivate them, right?
That's exactly true. I mean, everybody is different. Everybody is motivated by different things. I mean, one employee may want to give a presentation in front of the management team, for example. They get really excited by that. Another employee may be just scared to death to give a presentation in front of the management team. So, you know, you may think you're motivating an employee by putting them in front of the management team and with a presentation, and they're just scared to death and they're just hating it. So you do need to communicate. You need to spend time with them, get to know each of your employees as an individual, and see what's going to motivate or demotivate each one of those people.
Yes, yeah. I wonder if you can, we can have a word on surviving politics and people. This is always a very challenging environment. And just going back to when I was working in the financial world, for example, I remember going home one night, Peter, and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, here I am, a senior manager, but my employees are still my clients, if you will. My peers are my clients. My bosses are my clients. The board of directors, they are my clients. It's like you feel you've got all these people to try and satisfy. And the politics, you know, in that big circle were horrendous. It, yeah, drove me mad. It's very difficult to survive political environments, I think.
Yeah,
so,
terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, talk to us about your experiences in that and what you recommend to people.
Yeah, I think anytime you get at least more employees, there's going to be some form of politics. You know, it's just a natural thing, I think, when you get a group of people that, you know, especially as the group gets larger, there'll be a more diverse group of people. And I think the best thing, some people try to just ignore it, but I think ignoring it just allows, it kind of rewards that kind of behavior if you just ignore it. So I think you need to call it out. You need to, you know, make it, call it out for what it is. You know, talk to the person who's bringing in the toxic behavior, who's playing the politics, and ask them to disengage from it. You know, ask them to try something different that's not going to either upset the organization, going to create a toxic workplace. You know, those kinds of things, those kinds of behaviors that are negative and don't really get people engaged in their work, that actually start getting people disengaged, demotivated, and maybe even looking for another job. And then the last thing you want is someone who plays politics that ends up causing you to lose good employees because they just don't feel comfortable, they just don't want to deal with it.
Right, right. So the book, again, is called Wait, I'm the Boss, The Essential Guide for New Managers to Succeed from Day One, which we all want to do. Final thoughts, Peter. I know listeners can find out more about you at your website, petereconomy.com, petereconomy.com. Final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
I think that the most important thing as a manager is to communicate often, and particularly in difficult times, to be over-communicate, if anything. Don't under-communicate. So that would be my number one advice right now to any manager, whether you're new or well-established.
Yeah, communication is key. Peter Economy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Vicky. This is great.
And again, you can find out more about Peter at petereconomy.com. If you have questions, comments, or feedback on today's show, you can reach me through our website, conversationslive.net, where you'll also find more than 700 podcasts and 1,200 plus guest interviews. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Until next week, I'm going to say, I usually sign off saying live well, live strong. I think it's a bit more appropriate right now, given the times we're in. Stay safe and stay strong. We'll get through these crazy times together. Thanks for being with us.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.